Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to a brand new Arsblog Arscast right here on arsblog.com. How are you? Hope you're well. The new season begins this weekend. Arsenal play their first game on Sunday against champions Manchester City. It could have been an easier start to the season for new boss Unai Emery. It could have been an easier start to the season for us as fans. But there you go. The fixture list throws up what it throws up and all you can do is play the game. So we're going to look ahead to that game. We're going to assess where we are, our readiness for the season. We're going to look back at the summer, the transfer window. And yesterday, the transfer window closed at 5 p.m. and it's been weird. It's been a strange transfer window. I think not from an Arsenal point of view, really, because one of the things that people, I think, were encouraged about was the fact that we did our business early in the season. It was quick-ish. It was efficient. We can talk about the quality of the signings, but just in terms of getting the business done and not hanging around and not being scrambling for players right towards the end of the window, we didn't do that. Maybe there was some disappointment yesterday that we didn't sign anyone, but I really wasn't expecting us to bring anybody in. We needed a keeper, we got a keeper. We needed a right back, we got a right back. We needed a central defender, we got a central defender. We needed a central midfielder, and we got two central midfielders. And that's to add to the two £50 million plus strikers that we got in the last 12 months, Lacazette last summer, Aubameyang in January. We'd Mkhitaryan brought in. You know, there's good players in the squad anyway. So from our point of view, it was, I think, a pretty good transfer window in general, just talking about the way the business was done. The proof of what we did in the transfer market will be seen on the pitch over the course of this season. Whether the players are worth the money we paid for them, whether we got bargains, whether we overpaid, it all remains to be seen based on what Unai Emery can get out of the players and out of the team, what sort of a structure he builds, how quickly he gets them working together, and how quickly he can get the players doing what he wants them to do. I think that is going to be key. The only piece of transfer business we were involved in on deadline day was the departure of Lucas Perez to West Ham for £4 million. I think that deal in particular is an illustration of the kind of business we did in the last few years under Arsene Wenger. Some of it was good. We brought some good players in, but he was told by the scouts, he was told by people that Lucas Perez was a good player, but not really the kind of player Arsenal needed and not really at Arsenal's level. And we saw some good stuff from him. He scored some goals, he put in some decent performances, but Wenger, being a pragmatist, if he thought a player was good enough and could get him goals and help him win games, he would play him. And Unai Emery appears to have reached the same conclusion as Arsene Wenger that Lucas Perez was not what this team needed and has let him go. So I think we have to, whatever you think of Arsene Wenger, you have to respect the judgment of two very experienced football managers in that regard. But what it represents for Arsenal is a loss of £13.5 million, based on what we paid for him just 2 years ago. So it's not the greatest piece of transfer business we ever did. There are still players in this squad who need to go. David Ospina could go to Besiktas, but that could happen till the end of August. Joel Campbell is back in the squad, and he's a player who could easily go. Carl Jenkinson, you can still loan players to the Football League, so that might be an option for him. There are a few still who could make their way out of the club between now and the end of the window, but what we hold at least until January, and then there might be some decisions to make on players like Aaron Ramsey, like Danny Welbeck, both of whom are in the last 12 months of their contract, one of whom Arsenal want to keep, one they don't seem that bothered about offering a new contract to. So there are decisions that will come down the line in January. And of course, there was this strange business this week of loaning out Callum Chambers. We're going to talk about all those things and address those things in a roundtable discussion with our guests in a few minutes' time. We've got Charles Watts from Football London, Tim Stillman, and JB, who you might know on Twitter as at Gunnar Punner. We're going to talk about all that stuff with them. But first, let's have a little preseason chat with one of our great podcast friends. We're all looking forward to playing Manchester City on Sunday. Tayo Papula, are you looking forward to playing Man City on Sunday?
Speak for yourself, Andrew. No, of course. No, I'm looking forward to it because it's the start of the football season. Of course I am. But I used to go into the start of the season, as I think we all did. You know, we were spoilt in that era where it was either us or them to win it each time. I used to go into the season thinking that we, you know what, it's a clean slate. We can win the league. But now it's just a kind of, now it's like, can we hold on? And what a way to start as well. You know how, that is the biggest slap in the face the Premier League has given us, because like you stop believing in the tooth fairy and you stop believing in the fixtures computer.
Yeah.
Right. The fixture computer doesn't exist. It's not random. And what they do, what normally happens is Arsenal are supposed to play Burnley or Hull because, you know, you don't want the top teams to meet at the start of the season. And that's what the fixture can. That is absolute Premier League banter in the extreme, because they've decided that they want to keep the top teams apart. So they've given Man City Arsenal.
Oh, that's your reading of it, is it? Arsenal. Oh, my goodness. I remember when I was a kid, I remember the first game of the season. I don't know if I got like Community Shields mixed up or whatever, or Charity Shield as it was back then. And I could be completely wrong about this, but I always seem to remember we played Liverpool quite a lot near the start of seasons back in the early 80s and stuff like that, where, you know, from my vantage point, you just look at the fixture list and it wasn't like you could follow the game. And that start of the season optimism you have of, yes, we can do it, we're the Arsenal, we can win, we can get the title this season. And then you pick up the paper or you watch Match of the Day and it's like, oh, fuck.
Well, we've got Liverpool.
Yeah. And then you look at the result the next day, it's like, oh, God.
We used to have Everton at the end of the season. Over the last few years, we've had Liverpool quite early, haven't we? That's been a thing quite often. But yeah, giving us the league champions and the outright favourites on the first day of the season, it does. Maybe I'm just looking for pessimism anywhere at the moment, but it does go and say that we are not contenders, because you're not going to get a Manchester derby on the first day of the season, are you? You're not going to get, you don't. The big teams are not supposed to play each other on day one. So either it's an anomaly or we're not a big team anymore. Take it how you will.
Right. Okay. I'm not sure how to take that, actually, to be perfectly honest.
Sorry to bring you down to my level at the start of the season. I am excited because there's so many questions that we've got, but at the same time, you know, given the recent events, you can't help approaching things with a little bit of trepidation and a little bit of pessimism.
But I mean, are you looking forward to that first day of the season thing where you come back and everybody's in good form? And, you know, previous 22 years, you always have that, but it's been, I won't say blanketed by Arsene Wenger, but he was there for so long, and then for the last few years it was like, you know, could it be a little bit different maybe next season? And it wasn't, and then now it is. So is that not like feeding into it for you? I mean, I certainly have concerns and worries about certain things, but just even sitting here now talking to you, and I was reading stuff about Darren Burgess, who's our head of high performance, talking about how Unai Emery is absolutely, one of the main things he's focusing on is making the defense better. And there's part of me that goes, fucking brilliant. I love to hear that. Then there's another part of me that goes, fucking best of luck to you, Unai, because that's a big job you've got on your hands. But even the idea that he's, I mean, it's not something he could ignore, obviously, but the idea that this is something he's really focused on is pleasing to me, kind of regardless of how Sunday goes, because the effects of his work, I think, are going to be seen over the coming months rather than in just one game at the start of the season.
No, of course you're right. It's we've got something new. We've got questions that we've had all summer, which are going to be answered. We've had questions from the last couple of years, which are going to be answered. We've got an excitable new coach, and of course, I mean, I kind of damped down my Arsenal expectations. Now talking to you, I can see the first game of the season and I'm actually getting excited to see what happens. You know, I even said to my girlfriend this morning, she said, are we going to watch the game? You know, can we get a train back? Are we going to watch the game? I sort of went, well, maybe. And I was just lying to myself. Of course I'm going to be watching it. I'm away, so I won't be there for the first day of the season. But yeah, of course it's going to be really exciting to see what happens with the defence. And we are going to talk about the defence, I'm sure, pretty soon. But there are players, you know, we're coming back without too many different from major tournaments. You know, blessing and a curse. We didn't have as much involvement as we've had over the, but it might mean that we'll get off to a flyer. So there's a lot of unanswered questions. It looks like Ramsey, hopefully, is going to be fit. I want to see what that kind of that attacking trident can do. Yeah, it's the first day of the season. It's a new slate. Let's save anything negative for when it comes up naturally, rather than kind of put it on us in the first place. Yeah.
So Monday morning, you're saying? Is that? I'm kidding.
I mean, if you're going to test yourself, let's hope they don't embarrass us.
No, but I mean, it's part of it, isn't it? You know, it's gallows humor, and I think, unless it goes terribly, terribly wrong, you know, whatever happens on Sunday is only really the first step for Unai Emery, for new coaching staff, for a lot of new players, perhaps for a new system, for a new way of playing. Like, you know, the way you read sometimes about a golfer who feels like he's at the top of his game but decides to change his swing, and it takes him like 6 months or a year to get back to where he was. It kind of feels like that's what we're doing. So whatever happens on Sunday, everything kind of has to be put in that context.
Yeah, look, 100%. Like, exactly, you've hit the nail on the head. In terms of kind of gallows humour, we're always going to go and we're always going to do that. I will note that we normally start off at the top of the league, but I did notice the other day that The Guardian, I'm not sure if everyone does this, The Guardian put AFC Bournemouth. So we're not even top of the league on the first day of the season anymore, because they're in alphabetical order. AFC Bournemouth comes before us. So we've had that taken away from us. But that aside, we have got a new team. We've got a new coaching staff, like you say. And I'm really interested in the new way of playing, because, you know, it felt that football has been changing, and perhaps that our former coach wasn't changing with it. So it's going to be exciting to see whether we can match up against the best team in the league. And you're right, it's not going to be. I'm sure there will be people damning things on the first, at 5:45 on the Sunday. But it will give us a better idea of where we are, because it's the, you know, as a competitive game, friendlies, we can have loads of fun with friendlies. We've seen that over the years, but to see where we are, and it might as well be against the best team in the league as much as anyone else.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's going to be a long season ahead, and we'll obviously hope to see some of the young players at the club develop as well. Your boy, Alex Iwobi, given a new deal, a show of faith in him from Unai Emery, who it feels like he had an input into that decision more than the Callum Chambers one, for example, because that only happened a couple of weeks after he joined the club. But Iwobi, 22 years of age, Nigerian international, Arsenal Academy boy, been at the club since he was 9 years of age, and has, I think it'd be fair to say, hit something of a wall in terms of his development, but the potential is there. Myself and James were talking about it on Monday in the Arscast Extra. When I saw him in Dublin, it was like, holy shit, like he's big, he's bigger. I don't know what it is, but you can really see it. So, you know, I guess you're excited to see if Unai Emery can sort of bring him on, get him beyond where he is, and help realise some of that potential.
Yeah, I think that, Andrew. And I've been disappointed with him. You know, the ones that you love, that you're the toughest on. And he has stalled. And there is this confidence issue. I mean, he didn't have the greatest of World Cups with Nigeria. And it does feel that maybe he does need a different voice, because the message hasn't been going in. I was surprised I wasn't surprised to see Jack Wilshere move on. We can talk about that all day. But I was surprised that show of faith, that new contract, it feels like a real chance for him. You know what I mean? And it does feel like he's going to try and because we haven't gone crazy in the transfer market, of course we'll talk about who we bought in a minute, but it does feel like the new coach wants to shape the players that were there. And if he can get a tune out of Rob Holding, if he can get a tune out of Alex Iwobi, then it's a long time since we've seen those young players improved at Arsenal. It's a long time since we've seen that. And if Ainsley Maitland-Niles can come on this season, then we'll be getting our money's worth out of Unai Emery. So yeah, I'm with you. I'm really excited to see what, because the potential of Alex Iwobi is insane. But you know, we've seen flashes of it. If he can get some confidence in that final third, we've talked about that before when I've been on your show. If we can get that confidence in the final third, if he can start believing in himself, and if he can, then we could have, you know, we could have a player on our hands, as they say.
Yeah, absolutely. And some other young guys coming through as well, Eddie Nketiah and Rhys Nelson, hopefully, who will get minutes in the Europa League and the cup competitions. Just very quickly before we let you go, have you made of the Stan Kroenke thing, the Usmanov thing? It's pretty momentous, but in the very short term, I don't think anything is going to change. It's maybe in the longer term where people have some concerns.
I think that's probably... Again, Gallows, homicide. I think that's what's really kind of put a down on things for me at the start of the season. And I think you wrote a great article in The Guardian the other day about it, kind of summarising how I think a lot of us feel. The lack of transparency. We've already had an indication of how they really feel about us. As you know, thank you for our affairs and all. Thank you for your interest in our affairs and all of that. This guy doesn't have a track record of supporting the clubs that are under his ownership, and given that there's had to be a bit of transparency, and you know Arsenal have done the bare minimum with that transparency, now that we can go behind this kind of veil, that really worries me. You know, that really worries me. It worries me about this massive loan being taken, all the things that you talked about already. So we won't go over those. I think that's what kind of leaves me a little bit depressed about football's been eating itself for a while. It's not that long ago that we could take that kind of moral high ground as Arsenal fans. And, you know, first of all, with what we tried to do with Project Youth and, you know, the whole Bank of England club and so forth. Of course, that's gone. But this is the real nail in the coffin of that. And it leaves a bitter taste in my mouth. Of course, I support Arsenal. But I just, football feels like it's eating itself. And now we've just become part of that. And so I'm very disappointed in that. And you're right, in the short term, there won't be much change, but I do feel that we're not going to go to Newcastle levels, which we've seen, but of course not. But in terms of, and we can stamp our feet as much as we want, but he now has to do even less about it than he had to do about it before. And that really does depress me. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I know what you mean. It is, it felt inevitable, and the fact that there was nothing anybody could do about this inevitability is, I think, is part of why it's been so disheartening, particularly in the week before the start of the season. Whether that was Usmanov, you know, sticking it to Stan, or Stan sticking it to whoever he felt like sticking it to by it all going down this week. I mean, they could have waited a couple of weeks, couldn't they? We could have got things going, but anyway.
But you know what? We've still got Mkhitaryan to see. Maybe we'll see the best of him this time. You know, we've got Mesut, we've got Aubameyang, who I'm really excited to see this season. I'm really pleased about Lucas Torreira. Really pleased about him. I don't know if we're going to put too much on him. We've done this before. We did this with Xhaka, of course. But there's some exciting things there. I'm a little bit worried about the defence.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll have to trust, you know, we'll have to trust them, basically. I'm a little bit worried about what we've got at the back, but they know more than we do. We, you know, we play Championship Manager with our, you know, we look at the names and stuff, they're looking at them in training, so maybe they've seen something to be able to say that we're more complete than we as fans think, you know?
Okay, well, look, you know, yeah, I think that's fair. That's fair. We can have the concerns, but until we see how they perform, then those are just concerns. They're not realities or facts just yet. But we'll find out soon enough whether they are. Hopefully they're not. And hopefully Unai Emery can really build a defense that works, and also build a team that might protect its defense as well, which will go some way to helping in that regard. But look, we got to let you go. We'll definitely catch up during the season. Tayo, thanks a million.
As always, thanks, Andrew.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog.
With me now to discuss the transfer window, the hopes for the new season as we get ready to face Manchester City and everything else that's happened this summer. I'm joined first by Charles Watts of Football London. Charles, hi.
Hello, how are you getting on?
We've got JB, who's on Twitter, at Gunnar Punner. Hello to you.
Hi, Andrew. How's it going?
It's going well. And we've got Tim Stillman. Hi, Tim.
Hello there.
Charles, let me start with you. You were on the Arsenal beat today, a very quiet transfer deadline day. I don't think anybody had any realistic expectations of anyone coming in, but perhaps there was a sense that there might have been a bit more outward business. The only deal that was done was Lucas Perez going to West Ham. It does leave us with some players who are very, very much on the fringes of the squad.
It does indeed. I think we've got to remember that obviously the European window stays open for longer, and I think we'll probably see Ospina go, Joel Campbell possibly leave as well, and possibly even Danny Welbeck if the European team comes in for him. I think Welbeck could have gone today, but all the offers, from what I understand, that Arsenal got, pretty much most of them were for loans, and you know, he's out of contract at the end of this season, so it was nothing really that Arsenal were going to consider, so it was decided that he was going to stay. He was ready to go today. It was also if a decent offer came in, but it, like I said, it was only going to be a loan deal, and what would be the point in that for Arsenal accepting it? So he's decided he was going to stay. But there are a couple of Spanish clubs possibly looking at Danny, so he could go before the end of August. But I think certainly you're looking at Ospina and Joel Campbell and people like that. I can't imagine they're going to be at the club at the end of the month.
Tim, we also have some players who might go on loan. Carl Jenkinson, for example, could go on loan to a Championship club, which you know, he did that last season and he struggled at Birmingham City. He's somebody who could go, and a few young players, I guess, who aren't necessarily not only on the fringes of the first team, but also the under 23s, because there is this check-a-trade cup competition this season, which allows young players to play against established professionals, which I think they'll use as a development thing. But were you surprised at the lack of outgoing business, or you know, is this something that's been a problem for Arsenal, not just under Arsene Wenger? We've seen it again this summer as well. We're not a good selling club.
No, we're not. I mean, the fact that we couldn't get anyone to try and buy Danny Welbeck when I don't think he went in the end, but the sort of sums that were being touted for the likes of Danny Ings and players, and you know, Jay Rodriguez in past summers has gone for quite good money. So I don't really understand why a 27-year-old England forward. I'm not saying that like the biggest clubs would be interested in him, but there's a lot of clubs in the middle of the league in England who've got money. Clubs like West Ham, like Everton, who spent a lot. I really don't understand why we couldn't shift Danny Welbeck if that's what we wanted to do, and I don't really understand why it was all so last minute, because I know he came back late, but Danny Welbeck doesn't negotiate the transfer; his agents do. So. You know, surely they knew in June or July that they didn't want to extend and they were open for a sale. I'm not that surprised about Carl Jenkinson. He's a Championship League One standard player on £50,000 a week. We're going to have him one way or another till the end of his contract.
Yeah.
But, and, you know, Ospina and Joel Campbell, I think, will go eventually anyway. But Welbeck's the one I'm surprised about. I really would have thought there were quite a few Premier League clubs who would pay quite nicely for him, actually. And I don't really understand how we haven't been able to make that sort of deal happen.
JB, it does go against the efficiency with which we did our incoming business. And if you're not going to sell, if you're not going to give Danny Welbeck a new contract, it does feel like the only real option is to sell him, particularly as there are young players coming through who might make up that gap in the squad. We think about Reece Nelson, Eddie Nketiah as well, who could be a player. I don't think it does us any real harm to keep him, because he does add some depth and experience and a bit of quality, you know, particularly at Europa League level, for example. But we're leaving a bit of money on the table here, and we've already made a big loss on Lucas Perez.
Yeah, I mean, it's a shame to see Welbeck go in one sense, because I've always had a bit of a soft spot for him, and he's put in some a few good performances. I think the injuries were always a bit of a shame, and you probably see a bit of the Wilshere situation, where there is, you know, it's widely known that he's a player that gets injured quite a lot, and the injury he has is a chronic one, and one that won't go away. So you probably do have a situation where, despite the level he can play at, even if it's inconsistent, teams are risking shelling out £80,000-£100,000 a week for a player who might miss half the season, and that's probably had a bit of an impact on it. But I fully agree that, you know, when you look at Aubameyang and Lacazette, for the best will in the world, there's not much Welbeck offers over the two of those centrally, and unless one of them or both of them get fairly long-term injuries, I can't imagine him playing or at least starting more than maybe 5 or 6 games in a season, at which point, you know, you might as well, if you really rate Eddie Nketiah that highly, give him those 5-6 starts. So I get the logic that the club's following. I also understand why it would have been hard to find a buyer, and it might just be one of those where we end up sitting on him or getting a last season out of him, because there's no point letting him go for free now. But yeah, it's a shame.
I don't think it's the worst thing for Arsenal to have to keep him, to be honest, though. I know, like we said, you got Lacazette and Aubameyang are certainly the first choice strikers, but behind that, you've only really got Nketiah. I know you mentioned Nelson, but you don't really see him. You see him as a 10 or a winger. But in terms of an out-and-out forward, I do think Arsenal, if considering Perez has gone, they do lack some in that area. And I think if you go into the season just with Lacazette and Aubameyang and Nketiah, it's putting an awful lot of pressure on Nketiah to perform at a high level on a regular basis, which I'm not too sure at this stage of his development would be it would be a wise idea. So if there was no decent offer coming in, which from my understanding there wasn't, then I don't think Arsenal are in the worst position of having to keep Danny Welbeck. I think he's shown since he's been here how useful a squad player he can be, and when he is fit and confident, he can be a decent player. Plus, he provides you with an option out wide as well. So I'm not too worried about the fact we've kept him for a season. I think he's still got an awful lot to offer this year.
Yeah, exactly. And it's not as if we really needed the money to go out and get somebody at the end of the window. You know, they've spent money. I know we can talk about central defenders and all that kind of stuff, and we will do, but it wasn't like we were absolutely desperate to recoup money on Danny Welbeck. Whether we regret it next summer, it remains to be seen, but we'll have to wait and see. Maybe Stan, of course, now that he's the 100% owner, will dig deep and find transfer funds for us there. Charles, you were out in Singapore, and one of the common themes this season has been hard work. I know Tim and Andrew Allen and James were at an event at the club where they were given a bit of a tour of the training ground, and again the focus or one of the themes was how hard the team were working. I mean, you saw it firsthand out in Singapore. It is only preseason training, but was it noticeable that these guys were being well and truly put through their paces by Unai Emery?
It was very noticeable, not so much by Unai Emery, but by Juan Carlos Casido. He's when you get up close and personal to him on the training ground, you certainly can see how much he's working the players. I mean, Emery is very hands-on as well when he's there, but Casido's a man who leads the sessions. From watching from the touchlines, it is very, very noticeable how hard Arsenal are working and just how much the focus is on pressing and high-energy football and getting the ball back as quickly as possible. All the drills that you see, that I saw them putting through, that was the emphasis of all the drills and in the sort of match situations as well that you saw put on. It was all about getting the ball back high up the pitch, winning it back from at the front or certainly from the midfield, and then springing forward on the counter attack. And you saw it in glimpses in the games as well, I thought, especially in the first half against PSG. I mean, I thought Arsenal were very good. I think we're going to see a new look Arsenal this season in the way that they approach games. Very much work in progress. I'm not expecting them to be fantastic at it straight away, but I think as the season progresses, the more work that's done at Colney, I think you're going to see a very different Arsenal setup to the one that we've seen over the years under Wenger.
Yeah, JB, it is going to take some time, isn't it, for a new coach to come in and imprint his style on the team and for them to properly understand what he wants from them. So how does it frame the beginning of the season for you, or the first couple of months of the season for you? Obviously, we all want Arsenal to do well, to win games, to play well. But, you know, the start that he's been handed has been tricky enough when you look at it. The champions on the opening day and then two London derbies, one of the London derbies away from home at Stamford Bridge, a difficult place to go. Chelsea have finished the transfer window strongly. Then we have the double whammy of playing another London derby against two former players. We all have that dread of former players coming back to haunt us. Lucas Paris and Jack Wilshere will be at West Ham this season. What would you view as successful from, let's say, these opening three games?
I'm always a bit cynical when people start talking about hard work and seeing the team run more. I also think it kind of gives you a false expectation that things are going to change really quickly. You know, instilling a pressing attitude and changing the way the team plays is a lot more to do with coordination and cohesion, and that's not something that can necessarily be achieved in 2 months. So whilst it's good to see some early signs in pre-season of us playing differently, I wouldn't expect us to be, you know, playing with a perfect press from the first game. It's probably more realistic, you know, if you look at what Liverpool did under Klopp, it took them a while to get the press working, and they actually ended up getting caught out quite a lot in his first season when the press went a bit wrong. So we might have to prepare ourselves for it to be kind of fairly inconsistent. Having said that, as tough as the start is, you could argue there's no better time to play those two teams. They're both teams that are, I mean, City are City. They're the best team in the country by quite a long way, but they've had a lot of players at the World Cup, and Chelsea have finished the summer well. But I'd rather play them before Sarri gets them playing his style of football. They're kind of on this transition between, you know, 11 men behind the ball and breaking quickly under Conte and, you know, the super quick transition of Sarri. So I'd rather play them early as well. Doesn't mean it'll be easy, but I don't think it's as bad as it looks. You know, if we're going to lose the games, I'd rather lose them early whilst we're learning and then win later on in the season. And if we're going to play these guys, I think it's probably the best time to play them.
Tim, do you feel like there's going to be patience for Unai Emery to work with? Because on the one hand, there was such clamour for change and for something different and for a new coach and a new approach and for us to move in a different direction as a football club, you know, from top to bottom, on the pitch and off the pitch. All those things have happened over the last 12 months. But we know that football fans are emotional. We know that there is a desire for Arsenal to win. And perhaps in the back of people's minds, an idea that if Wenger goes, everything becomes hunky dory again. I mean, what's your sense on that side of things? Because while we can always dismiss the extreme reactions of people on social media because they don't really represent anything but those weird bastards who live at those extremes, and I'm sorry, but they are, you know, from one extreme to the other, whether you're hyper-negative or hyper-positive, that's weird. You know, that's a strange place to be. I mean, do you feel that there's enough of us in the middle for Unai Emery to work with, and for us to deal with things not going quite as well as we would like from the start?
I think in the first season, yes. I think really, maybe famous last words, we can't really do a lot worse than we did last season in terms of, you know, we really, really should be nailed on for that top six. Unless we have a proper Mourinho season, finish 10th. I don't think there'd be a lot of patience for that. So I think even if we do pretty much the same thing and we're six and we're a fairly distant six, I mean, that would be very disappointing. But I do think there was such a clamour for change, and it was such, I think, an overwhelming majority that wanted that change. I do think people, other than, you know, on the darkest recesses of the internet, will generally be quite understanding and quite patient. I'm not going to pretend that everyone's going to be kind of sitting there with their digital chalkboards going, oh, yes, it's because the press isn't working, you know, quite as well. I do just generally think that, you know, probably quite a lot of people will say, with varying levels of justification, Arsene left us in a bit of a mess, and it's going to take a little bit of while to unpick. I think that as well. Well, I think it will take a season and a couple of transfer windows. But yeah, I do tend to think, A, there will be patience for Emery, and to be honest, B, I think there's a little bit of maybe leftover chagrin for the end of the end of Wenger's reign, because it, you know, that was a real drift, those lot, and particularly last season. So I think it's a mixture of, there will be patient people, and there will be people who probably still dislike Arsene Wenger enough to kind of lay at his door, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
I think in a way, I think Emery's in a very good position, really, because I don't think it's going to be very hard for him to improve on last season. I mean, last season's away form was so embarrassingly poor. All he's got to do, and I know it's just the word all is quite a big one, but is win four or five get more games away from home, which technically shouldn't be too difficult considering how dreadful Arsenal were last season. You sort of look at the games that they lost and the teams they lost to away from home last year. If you just sort that out a little bit and continue your home form, which Arsenal have always been a very strong team at home, and when you consider the fact he's got a genuine world-class striker at the club who only played for half a season last year, and you've got him from bulletproof pre-season this summer, and you've added a very good, well, he looks like a very good defensive midfielder. I don't think it's going to be that hard for Arsenal to improve. I'm not saying they're going to win the league, far from it, but I think you're going to, for me, Man City and Liverpool, I think, will be top two.
Yeah.
And I don't see anything but beyond that to be too worried about. You know, I think Arsenal can comfortably challenge with the rest of their teams for it to get into that top four. So I think in a way he's in a pretty decent position. I think he will have, like I said, I think a lot of fans will be very patient with him as well. Certainly a lot more patience than they would have been if Arsene Wenger was still in charge.
Charles, I'm just going to ask you one more question because I know you have to go. We have to let you go. But just as I move on to transfer business, it feels a little bit to me like the signings that we made this summer, and I think everybody appreciates the fact that we made signings efficiently and we got them done early in the summer, but it feels to me that perhaps bar Matteo Guendouzi, who tallies with the kind of profile of player that Emery was trying to bring in when it was I think it was Yassine Adli from PSG, a young French midfielder, it feels like that was something that he wanted, that these are signings that have been made by the executive committee, Sven Mislintat, Raul Sinyehi, you know, Leno was Mislintat's pick, Socrates was clearly Mislintat's pick, Lichtsteiner, I don't think Emery had anything to do with that, maybe Lucas Torreira, but again, I doubt it. I think this was a talent identified beyond him, and we have a situation where this week they've let Callum Chambers go out on loan. Does it feel a bit to you like perhaps for the next transfer window or the transfer window beyond that Emery might need to have a little more input into the players that we bring in?
Possibly, but I don't think he will. I think this is the way of the world now at Arsenal. I think it's certainly going to be Mislintat driving the transfer business. That's what he's been brought in for. Whether that changes when Gazidis packs his bags and heads off, we'll have to wait and see. But I think right now Mislintat is certainly the man who's going to be in charge of all the transfers. And he's had a big say in it this summer. Like you said, Socrates is certainly his. Leno was certainly his. Gianduzzi was absolutely his, although from what I understand, Unai Emery had a big role in actually getting that one over the line and convincing him to join. And I like the transfer business that has been done. I'm not convinced by Socrates, I have to admit. What I've seen over in Singapore and in pre-season so far, I don't see him as much of an improvement on what Arsenal have already got. But other than that, I like the business. I do think they're a little bit short. I worry about injuries at the back and up front, and think the squad could end up looking pretty stretched with just a couple of injuries. And maybe what people have been talking about as in a wide attacker, would it be nice to get someone an out-and-out dribbler, an out-and-out pacey wide man, would it be nice. But other than that, I look at the business done. I'm really excited by Gianduzzi. What I've seen from him, he looks a hell of a talent, the sort of player you want to see Mislintat bring in. I like the Lichsteiner deal as well. I think he's going to prove to be a really decent addition, and fingers crossed that Torreira is as good as we all hope he's going to be. So on the whole, I look at the transfer business and I'm pretty happy with it. The Chambers one, I was surprised, especially as they didn't bring anyone in to replace him in the squad. But other than that, I think the business has been pretty decent. They've identified areas that need strengthening. They went out and done it, and they did it early. So on the whole, now the window's shut, I'm pretty happy. And I think Mislintat will be fairly pleased with the business that's been done, especially considering Arsenal being on a fairly strict budget.
All right, Charles, we'll leave you there. You've got to get some sleep before you go to Unai Emery's press conference tomorrow, and people can follow your stuff on Football London. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much, Charles. Have a good one.
All right, we're going to continue with the transfer business. JB, are you happy with the business we've done this summer, or are you left wanting a bit more? Or does it reflect perhaps the reality of where Arsenal are, that these are the players that we've brought in?
I was going to say both, and then you threw a third option in there. I think it's all three to an extent. It was kind of a solid but unspectacular window, and that partly reflected the fact that we didn't appear to have a lot of money to throw around, and that's also a follow-on from what happened in January. You know, if you look at our transfer business as January plus summer, we've actually done quite a lot to the squad.
Yeah.
You know, we brought in two top attacking players in the summer, one of which is a world-class striker and the other is a very good secondary creator. I guess one of the issues there is January was reactive. It was, oh shit, Alexis is going, what do we do? And summer felt like there were clear problems in the squad that had been identified and we decided to fix almost regardless of who came in. You know, there was a gap, the defence was not great. We had goalkeeping problems last season. We didn't have a second choice right back for 6 months. And we clearly needed a defensive midfielder, and maybe Emery got involved with a couple of those, but it felt like those were things the club was always going to do, and you know, we basically went out and just got them done, which is good to see. It just didn't look as cohesive as we might have been made to think. It then kind of went quiet. We didn't do much going out, which might have had an impact on further incomings, and obviously the biggest thing for our summer is still up in the air, which is what happens with Aaron Ramsey, which sounds like it's going in the right direction, hopefully, but we still don't have any more clarity on.
Yeah, well, with David Ornstein tweeting today that the Arsenal are confident but not close, which is at odds with some of the stories this week, which said that he is close to signing a new deal. So, look,
they haven't announced the club captain with 3 days to go until the start of the season, and they took the squad picture yesterday and didn't share it despite sharing all the youth team ones. So you do wonder if something's close, or if I don't know. It just feels a bit weird that we'd go into the start of the season without announcing the captain unless there was a reason for it.
Yeah, well, I think Koscielny will end up being the club captain. It's whether Ramsey is handed the captaincy when we line up against Manchester City, or who gets that armband. But we might come back to Ramsey. Tim, what's your sense of the business overall? You know, this director of football, football executive committee, head of recruitment system is in place at many football clubs where the coach really gets no say into who is being brought in. He might say, I want this kind of player or that kind of player. It's commonplace, I know, but do you think that's the best way to do transfer business? Because it seems to me like this week, Unai Emery has looked at our defence and thought he needs something else. That was the rationale that I come to when it came to Callum Chambers going out. I still don't quite understand why we've loaned out Callum Chambers. Go on.
Yeah, my reading of the Chambers, how much can you tell from an Instagram post? But I'm going to read the tea leaves from an Instagram post. When Callum Chambers put up on his Instagram, I decided this was the best thing to do. He was kind of, I thought that was quite deliberate, because nowadays Premier League footballers generally don't just put stuff on social media. It's signed off before it goes anywhere. And it sounds to me a little bit like he was the driving force behind that one, or at least he was quite open to it. And if he's made the decision that if I go to Fulham, I'll play 40 games, if I stay here, I'll play 15 to 20, and he thinks that that's best, and Arsenal, let's be honest, in defence, we're a series of 2- and 3-star hotels.
Yeah.
And I like Callum Chambers. I think he came on a bit at the end of last season. We've still got 4 centre halves if you don't count Koscielny, so I don't think it massively hurts us numbers wise. And to be honest, as much as I like Chambers, I don't think it enormously changes the level of our defence.
Do you not worry that at least Chambers had a bit of experience? Mustafi has been error prone. We've got Socrates, who's come in and is coming in with a blank slate, even if people have some reservations about him. Rob Holding.
Yeah.
But Mavropanos, who looked good in one game last season, or two games maybe, at the end of the season, which didn't matter. He got sent off in one, and he's 20 years of age. I mean, it just strikes me that if you're going to loan a player out in order to develop them, he seemed the most obvious candidate to go.
I'd agree with that. But like I said, I just get the impression that it was Chambers who kind of pushed for this, and Arsenal kind of went, does losing Callum Chambers change our fortunes this year? Maybe not. Maybe he'll be a better player if he goes away and plays for another year. I think the other thing, certainly not the only thing, because I think what you've said is right. Really, you'd probably look at Mavropanos as I think Holding and Chambers are much of a muchness, to be honest. I think at similar stages of their, Chambers has got, I think, 2 years on Holding, but I don't think there's a lot between them. Mavropanos is the one who's a bit of a wild card. We don't really know much about, and there's a lot of projection because of that about how brilliant he is, and we don't really know that yet.
It's the Guendouzi stuff with him as well, to an extent.
But with Chambers, I think the other thing that makes it a bit confusing, I suppose, for people is the fact that he signed a new contract. And actually, that's maybe unusual, but you do see, we've done it ourselves with Joel Campbell. I think we did it with Cole Jenkinson for some reason. Players signing contracts and going out on loan on the same day.
Yeah.
What's strange here is there's been a month's gap. But I think one of the things that maybe we have to get used to, and I don't think Arsenal were really doing things this way before, is that signing a new contract is not necessarily a long-term declaration of faith. It's as much about protecting the asset, to use our phrase. So if you look at the players we've signed up, Iwobi, Maitland-Niles, Chambers, they've all got one thing very, very identifiable in common. They're young, they classify as homegrown. And basically, I don't think that Emery or Mislintat or whoever has definitely decided that all three of these players are the future of Arsenal. I think they've just decided, let's get them on a contract, let's have a look at them, and in 2 years, if we decide no dice, we can sell them for good money. Because unless you do something really stupid, like give Cole Jenkinson a 20-year contract on £50,000 a week, generally homegrown players don't really lose value at that age. So I kind of tend to think that maybe the contract for Chambers wasn't this massive display of faith that effectively he's still on trial.
I
get Chambers wanting to give himself first team football, and I understand that if a conversation has been had and he's, you know, not in first team plans, then yeah, maybe it does make sense to go to a team like Fulham. The flip side of that is if you're a centre back at Arsenal and the only thing standing between you and the first team is Mustafi, I'd want our players to back themselves there.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And I love your optimism, Tim, about being able to sell these players at good prices, because that's something that we really haven't shown any great aptitude for. But, you know, I just think the whole Chambers thing is really strange, considering he signed a new contract last November, then he signed a new contract in July. Unai Emery says he's part of my plans. You know, so something changes within 4 weeks. And if he's decided, okay, Callum Chambers isn't the guy, he's not that much better than Mavropanos or Holding, fine, I get it. I kind of think that four centre halves, even though we do have some players who could play in there if we need to add a push, you know, four centre halves when two of them are as raw as Holding and Mavropanos, and the other two, they, Mustafi in particular, you know, makes my heart hurt. you know, I take JB's point there. Like, back yourself to do better than him, you know. But
I think ultimately my issue probably with Arsenal's business in defence is that instead of like signing Socrates for 20 million and then kind of vaguely scrabbling around at the end of the window for another 20 million centre half, you know, why not just buy a really, really good one for 35 million who really can hold like a fairly average back line together?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I guess what I'd say there is defences aren't necessarily fixed in the transfer market. And I think given most of the team is the same personnel, we're going to have to look to see what Emery's a manager who actually has quite a good defensive track record. So I wouldn't be surprised if most of the changes we see, whether or not they're instant, that's another question, come from the training ground and come from, you know, how we set up. Torreira himself is another little addition. You know, we've just seen teams in the past that you can buy whoever you want in defence, they'll get exposed, and you have to be a ridiculously good defender to play in the Premier League with no protection. So whilst personnel is important, you know, how the team defends is arguably more important.
Yeah, I mean, that's,
we might see a different side to those players.
I still think they'll get exposed, though, to be honest, because if Arsenal are going to go for this slightly high press, you know, when you watch Tottenham and Liverpool, it's a real, like, they've got it to a fine art where it's hard to get past their midfield. Once you do get past their midfield, both of those teams look exceptionally vulnerable, even Spurs. It's just hard to get into the last third. And I think you're going to see that for Arsenal.
For a year and a half under Klopp, they were getting done by the long ball. Just went straight over the press, won the first knockdown and went at them. And yeah, I think we have to be aware of that. What we have had in the past is obviously exceptionally good one-on-one defenders. Koscielny at his best was very quick. Bellerin is another really fast player. So we've had a bit of, you know, we've almost lost that speed in defence to some extent. But I just don't know if it's something that will be solved purely through personnel. You know, is one top centre-back going to fix our defence? Probably not.
Yeah, no, probably not. But it's also why Klopp has spent big money back there, because he knows, a bit like Wenger used to know, I think. You know, Wenger's best teams had either Tony Adams or Sol Campbell, like absolute elite defenders holding it together.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, Klopp, he knows he's not really defensively protecting his team, which is why he's prepared to spend loads of money on a goalkeeper and a defence and someone like Virgil van Dijk, because he's thinking, well, when they're called into action, they're going to be really exposed. So I need exceptional individuals. And Arsenal don't have that in defence at all.
The other point to make is that I don't think
Mustafi is an exceptional individual, just in the wrong way.
I don't think we can at this moment in time attract that elite defender to the club.
No.
You know, that's the reality of our situation. We're playing Europa League football. We're not going to be able to attract one of the top defenders in the world. Maybe we could buy a young defender who could become that. Who knows? But that's where we are. So when we talk about our defense and how we're going to improve, I think, you know, the point about organization, about structure, about protection from midfield, about guys knowing their jobs, it sounds cliched to say it, but trying to prevent danger before it even happens, you know, it's something Wenger always spoken about. You know, how do you deal with somebody like Andy Carroll, for example? Well, we stop crosses. You know, it's being aware of how other teams are going to come and attack us and whether we can nullify their dangerous points before they get within striking distance of exceptional individuals like Mustafi and what have you. JB, goalkeeper is an area which we've all wanted the club to go out and improve. We've spent £22.5 million on Bernd Leno. I'm going to have to make a decision on this one. But, you know, when we talk about our signings, we bought in a 26-year-old goalkeeper who's got 300 games under his belt, loads of experience, still relatively young in the world of a goalkeeper. He can go on for a long time. We brought in a new goalkeeping coach, which I think is a very, very important development. Those things are really positive in terms of what this might mean for Leno and how he might develop as a goalkeeper. Do you see him being given the number one jersey from the start, and what do you make of the signing?
I think it was clear last year that we needed a new goalkeeper. I don't think Cech has been as bad a signing as people are now labelling him with hindsight. He was, you know, his first season he made a number of, you know, match-winning or match-saving saves. Definitely felt like he was on a pretty steep decline last year, but I still think he was more inconsistent than just terrible. Ospina has been Ospina since we got him. And it's nice to know that we've now decided we want a goalkeeper who doesn't stand behind his line all game. I haven't seen a lot of Leno, but from what I've read, he kind of came on the scene early, impressed, and is a good goalkeeper, but, you know, inconsistent and has the odd error in him, which doesn't necessarily fill me with confidence as an Arsenal fan who's used to seeing that every season. Age profile, I guess we bought a guy at the right age, and you've seen someone like Fabianski, the goalkeepers do go on quite a steep development curve, and, you know, in their mid to late 20s you do start to see the experience coming through. So if that's something we can coach out of him, that's great. He also wasn't that expensive. I mean, it comes back to, if you look at what Edison cost, what Alisson cost, maybe, you know, that top goalkeeper was beyond us. I don't think it was a dumb signing. It's one of those that at 20 million, if we get it wrong, we can almost correct in a year or two. I'm not excited by it, but I get why we did it. I think that's kind of the theme of the summer, which was safe signings. If anything, I think I'm a bit disappointed at the age profile of the players we bought. With the exception of Torreira and Guendouzi, I would have maybe liked to see a little, you know, maybe one or two of those data picks and really try and unearth a gem. But I'd like to see Leno. I think Cech will start as number one just for a bit of consistency, but I wouldn't be surprised if it would be Leno by the end of the season as quite a clear number one.
Tim, what do you reckon? I mean, my feeling is you don't spend that amount of money on a goalkeeper and not have him as the number one. Before you give me your opinion on the player itself, I do wonder as well sometimes about the dynamics of this structure that we have in place. Because if everybody accepts that Sven Mislintat is the guy making the picks and he's the guy doing the recruitment, does it reflect on him poorly if we spend a club record fee on a goalkeeper and we then pick Petr Cech? You know, can those external pressures be, inflicted upon the manager or the head coach?
Maybe, yeah, maybe. And I think one of the things is as well, when we appointed Mislintat, it wasn't, I know he has this diamond eye reputation. I don't think we were just buying his eye, as it were. I think we were buying his contacts book. I think that was one of the things that attracted Arsenal to him. And a lot of the business he's got done, you know, we say it's been fairly easy to do, and we kind of say, yeah, these signings look fairly easy, but that's because Ms. Lintat's contacts are quite good. We're a club who struggled to get like the likes of Mark Schwarzer over the line, you know, with a
Sanjay too as well.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You know, with a club that got the runaround from Joel Campbell, I think his Rolodex is a significant part of his portfolio. On Leno himself, I don't really know, because the amount of Bundesliga I watch every season is precisely zero. So I don't think I've ever seen him play, maybe a game or two for Germany. But I'd be really interested to know what was behind this signing. Is it because at the age of 26, they see something in him, or they see some talent in him, or they see something to work with? Or is it because, like you said previously, we're a Europa League team, and at the moment, you know, this is our second year in the competition, we're in a position of weakness, and we kind of have to make do with, you know, tier two players. So I'd be really fascinated to know what the rationale really was behind this signing. I'm completely open-minded because I've never seen the guy play, basically. But one of the things that has been striking, I guess, from pre-season is that Emery really wants to play out from the back, and he looks pretty handy with the ball at his feet, which is not insignificant nowadays. So, yeah, I wonder, because a lot of the really good kind of data guys have been kind of writing about him, and they don't seem to see anything in his numbers that suggests, you know, that the next Manuel Neuer is about to emerge. But like a lot of our signings, well, some of our signings, I think it's more straightforward because of the age profile. But and I'm with you as well. I fully expect him to start on Sunday. He's 26. He's played something like 300 professional games. He's on the fringes of the Germany squad. He's not, you know, he's not wet behind the ears. This is an experienced goal. You know, he's young-ish for a goalkeeper, but he's got a really good level of experience. And they've paid, you know, is he the most expensive player we've bought this summer?
Yeah.
Maybe
no, Torreira. Torreira, I think, was around 26.
But he's in that kind of bracket, and nobody doubts that Sokratis and Torreira are starting as and when they're ready and when they're fit, certainly in Torreira's case. So I'd be very surprised not to see him start on Sunday.
I don't suppose it'll be a surprise to anyone. We've got a season preview going out on Arsblog today, where Tim, you wrote part of it. There was myself, Andrew Allen, James as well. And we all took a look at the individual components of the team, goalkeeper, defence, midfield and attack. We all had concerns about our defence, and I think those will play out one way or the other as the season goes on. But where people were a bit more confident was with midfield, having brought in Lucas Torreira, who, you know, from what we see in the World Cup, has got some qualities that would prove very useful to this Arsenal side. Perhaps looks the right kind of foil for Granit Xhaka, who was given a new contract as well. And I don't think that was because, you know, we're going to loan him out or anything like that. So midfield, JB, looks like we're addressing issues that have long been a problem for us. It's about finding partnerships in there, but about finding balance between the skill sets of the players. And when you look at the personnel, there's Torreira, there's Xhaka, there's Aaron Ramsey, for now anyway. Ainsley Maitland-Niles is in there. Mohamed Elneny is a, you know, a solid, if unspectacular, but reliable option. Guendouzi is a guy who I think still has a long way to go. I think expectations might be a little bit high, but does have that perhaps potential to grow into a player who could be really useful for us. So midfield looks better than it has.
Yeah, I mean, it's where you win games, right? And it's exciting to see, you know, it's a combination of your famous internal solutions with Maitland-Niles, with Guendouzi, with Torreira. You've got three different profiles of players there. You've got a ball carrier, you've got a straight passer, and you've got a pretty tenacious defensive midfielder who can also pass. To give you a different, you know, a number of different combinations in there. And I think the most exciting thing for me there is actually, you know, we can get quite gloomy about our defence. At the other end of the pitch, we've got an incredible range of attacking players. And one of the biggest frustrations last season was our inability to consistently, A, get the ball up the pitch to good players in dangerous areas, and B, kind of retain the ball and build pressure. And you need a good midfield to do that. So fixing that not only should hopefully allow us to actually play where we want on the pitch and kind of stretch teams and test teams how we want, but from an individual perspective, it takes burden off Aubameyang. Hopefully he gets to kind of play on the last man a bit more. It takes a huge burden off Ozil, who spent half of last season coming deep to help us build. And hopefully if you get Torreira in there, we'll protect the defence a bit more. So I guess balance is the right word. I don't know what my ideal, I still can't work out exactly who I would start in there, but I think we actually have options now to the extent we can probably mix it up a bit depending on who we're playing, and that can only be a good thing.
I think my starting three in there would be Xhaka, Torreira and Ramsey. I think Ozil is going to play as part of the front three with Mkhitaryan. And when you do add Aubameyang, when you add Lacazette, and we spoke earlier about Danny Welbeck, you know, we do have a lot, Tim, at that end of the pitch that can create and that can score goals. And if we are going to take some time to get organized defensively and to work within these structures that Unai Emery wants, having that kind of quality at the other end of the pitch really is going to be, I think, a blessing, probably a salvation at times as well. I don't mean to say that we're going to be like one of those teams that has to score five goals to win a game, but it might be a case that in certain games, our firepower is going to be the thing that sees us through rather than our solidity at the back.
Yeah, absolutely. I still think our attack's slightly unbalanced, but I don't think that that's a huge problem. And I think one of the really big things we've got going for us up there is all of those attackers are in their prime, more or less. You know, Ozil, Aubameyang, Mkhitaryan are all 29. You know, even Welbeck's 27. Lacazette's, what, 25, 26? They're all at a really good age. They all know what they're doing, basically. And I think that we can have a fair amount of fluidity up there. And one of the things I think is massively underplayed, I've listened to and read any number of season previews by now by sites and publications that deal with everyone in the Premier League. And one of the things that's hugely underplayed is Aubameyang. I think in Aubameyang, we can claim, alongside, you know, Aguero and Harry Kane, we can claim to have the best striker in the Premier League. If he stays fit, which Arsenal fan would be surprised if he won the Golden Boot? And we haven't been able to say that since Van Persie left. And that is a huge upside. That is a huge upside. Even really average teams with great strikers can go far. You know, Brendan Rodgers nearly won a league title because of Luis Suarez and, you know, to a slightly lesser extent, a fit Daniel Sturridge and a young Raheem Sterling. You know, that was good enough to bring a pretty average Liverpool side overall to the title. And I'm not saying that that's where we'll go, that we'll go towards the title. But in terms of getting into the top four, I think that could be hugely significant. And yeah. I think I've slightly relaxed on, you know, the idea of Aubameyang playing wide left and Lacazette up front in certain games. I'm still not mad about it, but at the same time, I still think when you look at the amount of goals typically scored by the league champions, Arsenal are always a long way short of that in the last 5 or 6 years. So for most of our home games, to be honest, I'm quite enthused by the idea of Ramsey at 8, Ozil at 10, Aubameyang left wing, Lacazette up front. It's not hugely balanced, but I'm not convinced it has to be for, say, 80% of our home games. I think,
well, I mean, if you get...
Sorry, yeah, I was just going to say, I think that will blow most teams away.
But I mean, if you get enough from... It's one of those where it comes back to coaching, right? If you get enough from your left back, if you get enough width there, then you can almost afford for whoever's nominally on the left to actually end up playing like a two. A lot of teams do it. Salah played a lot of last season towards the end, basically central. And that comes back to... You know, you probably need a bit more coaching for it, and it's something we've struggled with in the past, maybe, where you just give the team fluidity and they don't adjust in the right way. But yeah, I think I mean, Andrew, I agree with you. I think that's what we'll start the season with, but I wouldn't look past Emery's willingness to play Lacazette and Aubameyang together quite a lot in pre-season.
Yeah. Yeah, it's fair. I mean, it's not as if Aubameyang can't contribute from that left-hand side. And maybe, like you say, I mean, he doesn't score his goals from outside the box. He ends up in the box, even if he's playing out wide left. It's just at times when you see him chasing back and he's helping out the left back, you're thinking, well, that's not necessarily where I would want a world-class striker, but needs must. But, I mean, I think it's interesting, isn't it, that we have this, what's the word? Conundrum about how to deploy two really good strikers, because I think Lacazette will score plenty of goals, particularly in home games. I think he's going to be a very important player against sides that might sit a little bit deeper against us. It's good to have those options. So as much as we might be concerned about some of the other aspects of the team and how he's going to put it all together, I think there are some real positives about this squad and what the potential they have is. Just quickly, finally, for both of you, JB, I mean, are you excited about the start of this new season? Does the quality of the opposition that we're playing to begin with, does it sort of take a little bit of the shine off it, or is that just part of the grand theatre of the Premier League?
I mean, look, it's all a bit new. And I think it's very exciting because we don't know what to expect. I don't think anyone expects us to beat City, and it's all just getting behind the new manager and seeing what this team could come up with. So, yeah, it's not that new a team in terms of playing staff, but there's a lot to look forward to. And it's going to develop, right? Like, I think there was a feeling the last few seasons that if we started badly, there wasn't much more to expect. We knew what was coming. Whereas there is this evolution that everyone's expecting to see, and we all know it might not be from game one. So, you know, whether or not we have that patience, there's something to buy into. And I think the fans feel a lot more, I don't want to say united because it's a horrible word, but a lot more together, and there's just this collective excitement to see what could happen now, and it's a new chapter for the club. I don't know how long that will last, and I'm sure when we concede two in the last 10 minutes against Watford, that will all go away quite quickly. But yeah, I'm excited. And I actually like the group of players. Just, I guess the last thing on Aubameyang was, I think we understated or underrated how much he'd bring aside from his actual football. I think his attitude and mentality, both as a winner and the way he appears to contribute in the dressing room as quite a cheery guy and a mentor to the younger players, shouldn't be overlooked either. So I'm just quite excited for this group of players and to see what we can do under Emery.
Do you think a top four finish is realistic?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with, I can't remember whether it was yourself or Tim who said that City and Liverpool are the teams that are really kicking on. Everyone else has had pretty average summers. United are in Mourinho meltdown third season, and Tottenham have done nothing. So let's see. I think we should be aiming for it. I don't see why not. And then we can use the Europa League as something that just makes sure we get through the group. And if we're struggling in the league or whatever, then let's do everything we can to win that and get back in the Champions League that way.
Tim, you know, the away form last season was so, so unbelievably bad that I think it took the focus a little bit off how good the home form was. I think only Manchester City had a better record at home than we did. So there's something to build on there from the home form point of view, and for, you know, not necessarily the Emirates as a fortress, but certainly the players would feel confident at home. And if we can improve the away form, even by, I don't know, 50% or 60%, you know, there's the potential for us to finish quite high up the table. You know, the other teams taking into account everything that they've done and the quality that they have. I'm not saying it's easy, but you can see how we could make that improvement based on what we did last season and what Unai Emery might be able to get out of them. I mean, do you feel like top four should be the target, or definitely is the target?
Yeah, absolutely. I think fourth will be pretty close between Arsenal, Chelsea and Spurs. I think United might end up on a little island on their own in third. And between Arsenal, Chelsea and Spurs, honestly, I think it will come down to something like, I don't know, injuries or luck or whatever. I really think that those three teams might be quite close together. If Tottenham get a couple of big injuries, I could see them struggling. I think Chelsea might have some teething problems with a new manager. And for us, I definitely see us being better than last season. And like you said, I think really we should be aiming realistically for some marginal gains. And the away form is the easiest one to identify. Just don't be terrible. Just be at, like last season, I think we were 15th or 16th in the away table. Push that up to 10th, which is still not great. And we'd have been right in the top four conversation last year. So I think that will be quite tight. And I think that might become apparent quite early in the season. I think these patterns are going to be set quite early. And I think it will be, you know, before Christmas, we'll see, you know, Man City and Liverpool kind of duking it out, United a little bit behind them, and then the three kind of London clubs duking it out for that fourth. I'm not sure if we'll get it because I think it might come down. I think it might even go to the last day and it might be something very marginal and there'll only be a couple of points in it. But yeah, absolutely, I think that's a realistic aim. I don't think, as much as there are misgivings about some of the squads around us as well, and I don't think we've got anything to feel massively inferior about there.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think, you know, it's okay to be slightly concerned about some aspects of our team, but also be excited and enthused about the other side of it, the potential that we have from an attacking point of view, the new coach, and just the reinvigoration that will give some of the players who've been at this club for a long time, doing the same thing season after season after season under Arsene Wenger. You know, I think they're going to respond really well to that. Ian Wright said on the podcast on Monday, he'd been speaking to Steve Bould, and the players are really buying into what Unai Emery is going to do. Some of them will fall by the wayside. Some of them won't like having to do the hard work, and some of them won't like having to watch videos and all that kind of stuff. But those that do, you know, and really try and improve could help push us on this season. Anyway, look, lots going on in the background there, so I'm going to let you guys go. JB, thanks a million.
Thanks, Andrew.
And Tim, thanks a million. We'll catch up soon.
Cheers, my pleasure as always.
Thanks to the guys for their time and for looking ahead to a brand new season. And that's what it is, folks. It is a brand new season. And even though I'm a bit trepidatious about facing Manchester City because they are so good and we haven't had as much time as we might like to prepare under a new manager for him to work with the players and get his methods across, I'm excited. I am excited. I'm enthused. And if you can't be excited and enthused and optimistic at the start of a brand new season, then when can you be? When can you be? You know, we discuss things, and sometimes I think it's easy to not to go down the rabbit hole of worst case scenario. If we think, oh, what if the goalkeeper isn't going to be good? What if Mustafi is Mustafi? And what if Socrates is not the player we need? And, you know, I get it. I do understand it. But maybe we have to look at it from the other point of view as well, or at least consider the possibility that things might go better than we think rather than worse than we think. And look, whatever happens against City on Sunday, I hope we do ourselves justice. I hope we give a good account of ourselves. Obviously, I hope we can take something from the game. If we do, it'll be hugely positive. It'll give us a nice little kick into the new season. If it doesn't, we have to put it in perspective. We have to remember that it is a game against the best team in England, and we are not maybe as ready as we are going to be in 6 months' time to face them. So, you know, I think we have to consider that and not lose the run of ourselves. You know, that works the other side as well. If we win, it doesn't mean that we're immediately going to be champions or anything like that. Just step back and let's try and put everything within the context of a new season, a new era, a new coach, new players, new methods, and maybe some new patience and understanding from us as fans, because I think we're going to need it. We did a competition last week to give you a chance to win a copy of a book, Almost Invincible, The Arsenal Class of 91, written by Dan Betts. Dan was on the podcast with us. The question I asked you, who was our leading scorer in that season? The answer was Alan Smith. Alan Smith was the answer. So congratulations to Samir Kuestani. I think that's how you say it, Samir. Apologies if it's not, but well done to you. You've won the book. I'll be in touch with you and we'll get that book sent out to you. As for the rest, well, I think we should leave it there. There's been plenty of listening. There's more talking to do on Monday. James and I will be here with an Arsecast Extra on Monday, looking back at that opening day of the season. I'm going to keep everything crossed for this game. Fingers, toes, whatever else that's crossed. Whatever artifacts of good luck I can bring out, I'm going to get those. We might need it, but you never know. Football is a funny game, and we could be sitting there on Monday morning discussing a really great win. Who knows? Who knows? And I haven't even had any beer yet, so that'll tell you. But anyway, look, thanks as ever for listening. We'll catch you on Monday with the Arsecast Extra. Let's enjoy the weekend and hope that the Premier League comes back with a bang in our favour. Until the next one, cheers. Bye-bye.
Hi, I'm Stan Kroenke. I'm the soon-to-be 100% owner of Arsenal Football Club. This is happening because I bought the shares off that Russian guy, the one who said he was an Arsenal fan and that he was never, ever going to sell his shares. But he did. Now, I know this has caused some disquiet among the Arsenal faithful, but I would like to tell every single one of our loyal customers, we want only the best for this fantastic, historic, great football franchise opportunity. So I'd like to lay out here and now in great detail our ambition and how we're going to make it happen. Hopefully that clears everything up. And if it doesn't, well, I don't care.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.